Hey everyone, this is Ksenia Muntan and welcome to another episode of People of Marketing podcast, where I talk to top marketers about the story of their careers, the choices, mistakes, wins, and imperfections of their work life. My guest today is Oliver Yonchev. He's managing director to one of the world's fastest growing agencies, Social Chain. He's responsible for the development of the group's North American operation. At 29, he's at the forefront of creative and social media marketing, delivering global strategies for the likes of Amazon, Coca-Cola, Disney, Uber, TikTok, to name just a few. Oliver, thank you so, so much for joining me today on People of Marketing podcast, and I hope I nailed your intro.
Pleasure. And you nailed the intro. It was a beautiful intro. The one thing I would say is yes. I'm now 30, but I will take
no.
I will listen, you hold on to your 20s as long as you can hold on to it for. So let's dispel the myth and say 29.
Grateful for mistakes like that, right?
Love it.
Perfect. So let's start by telling us a bit more about your role at Social Chain. You know, in our industry, Social Chain is probably one of the most famous and most fast-growing agencies of its like. So congrats on your very, very impressive ascension within the company. Tell us, what do you do as a managing director for the US and North American operations?
Yeah, sure. So I head up the US operation, and that can involve wearing many hats. My background's always been a marketeer myself, so I suppose I stay very close to our work. I suppose if you were to describe what I do in a few things, it was to execute on the vision of the business, where we want to go, where we want to head. I suppose protect the culture of the agency, and then also help with the development, whether that's the hiring of the right people. We've been very fortunate to have so many amazing people work for Social Chain, to continue bringing more amazing people into the business, to continue to do great work, and everything and anything that goes along with that.
Great. So something that I like to start this podcast with is by going back to like square one. I think it's really fascinating when we connect the dots, looking backwards. So what would you say was your first interaction with marketing? What got you into marketing actually, you know, in the first place?
So there's probably a multitude of steps that led me to marketing and pursuing a career and getting involved in the industry. I would say my first roots to this is before I, upon leaving college, after leaving college at 18 years old, I joined a band. So I was a musician, a drummer, and I joined a band with my brother and people I knew from college, and we went off for 2 years and did what bands do. We were going to be rock stars, and we did all of those things, and as part of that, I took, I suppose, the role of managing the band, and that led me to promoting the music that we did, to promoting ourselves, and that was sort of 2 to 3 years of touring and those things. So my first interaction with marketing was simply doing in the music industry, and the band that I was in, we were fortunate to do some cool things. We toured across Europe, we got signed, we played at Glastonbury, and I was dead cert that I was, you know, going to be a musician and those things. And then suddenly we did what bands do: when lots of creative people get together, they fall out.
Yeah, that's what happened with the band.
Yeah, my brother fell out with the guitarist, and we had a record deal. We got to number 3 in the UK indie charts. We recorded our album with the Arctic Monkeys producer, and then we never actually released the album. We split up because a band without a singer, I would consider my brother to be the talented one of the family.
Yeah,
and he went on, fell out with the guitarist, and that was it. And then I had to figure out and do something. The timing was, I was kind of limited. I stuck to what I knew. So I went to university to study music production. And the module I picked was music production and promotion. I academically started to study PR and marketing. And it was in a more traditional sense. So they were the two steps that I would say my first example of marketing was having to promote myself. and social media was emerging. This was back in the day of MySpace.
Yes.
MySpace was the dominant platform in the UK. We had Bebo rising. A very different world to what we operate in today in social media. So I had to learn to navigate those platforms. And then I went on to study marketing and learn about, you know, the psychology of marketing and those things.
So that's so interesting. When I researched you online, I didn't find anything about your other life, about your music life in the past. How so? Did you clean up your profile?
Not at all. If you go onto YouTube,
okay, so that's the one place that I didn't check you out.
Yeah, if you search for the band names, we had two names during our tenure. But if you go search them, you'll see me trying to be a wannabe rock star at 18 years old. so it's out there.
Good. So talking about your passion for career and how you tried marketing for the first time, kind of for yourself, promoting your own brand. When you started, tell us about how you transitioned into the marketing world. What was like the first professional job in the sector that you've ever had?
Yeah, of course. So while I was studying in my second year, I joined a newspaper group in the United Kingdom called Johnston Press. And I worked part-time and I worked in advertising sales. So I was selling recruitment ads. That was my sort of first introduction to the commercial aspects of advertising. It was very simple. People had jobs and we promoted them through a whole host of local papers. And then into my third year, I went to join the BBC. There's some programming in the United Kingdom called Introducing, which was actually a vehicle that heavily promoted the band that I was in. So I had connections. I joined BBC Introducing, acting as a researcher. And again, you would wear many hats when you do any kind of internships or apprenticeships or those things. You're kind of just wanting to immerse yourself in as many things as you can.
Yeah.
So that was everything from researching guests through to helping produce the programmatic calendar to brainstorming and those things. I learned the commercials pretty early. I was studying theory of marketing and PR and learning about the history of sort of great work and the principles of marketing. And then I was fortunate then to get involved in the media world. Following that, I went on to join a graduate scheme for a company called Bauer Media. Bauer Media, a large media owner across Europe. It was the first graduate scheme that they'd produced in a long time. I went through almost like a talent show interview process. there were 2,000 applicants for 8 jobs. It was the first time they'd launched it. I show up on the day. They do like a 15-minute speed dating interview. I talked about my background of being in a band. I'd done lots of random, I suppose you could call them entrepreneurial things. While I was in university, I'd made some investments using my student loans and did some interesting things there. And I remember putting on my CV that I was an investor. So they were like, I show up at this interview, they go, you've just talked through your phone. I don't know if I believe you or not. The best item to describe you. And you say you're a musician that's also an investor. And you study music and marketing. So it was this wild eclectic mix. I think they probably found that interesting or different. I went through a multitude of stages and got my first job in a professional capacity as an account manager. And during that process, I was very fortunate because that was an intensive sort of 8-week period introduction to advertising where we were introduced. We would have guest speakers from authorities, bodies, people who worked commercially, top marketeers, top creatives. And it was essentially like going back to school for 8 weeks where 7 others all lived together, became amazing friends. And then we all went off to join a radio station around the United Kingdom as our base routes. And then I spent almost 4 years at Bauer Media before leaving to join a company that was an emerging startup in Manchester called Social Chain. So that kind of led me to the last couple of years.
How was the transition from this, you know, Bauer Media is quite a huge media conglomerate. It has, you know, from my own research, more than 5,000 employees. And how was the transition from this huge company to this hip and very millennial agency startup?
It was very different, of course. I think actually for a company of its size, I had an amazing experience at Bauer Media.
Yeah.
I learned a lot of the skills and the foundations that I think lead to success in marketing, and certainly have thoroughly helped me through what I do today. And I think Bauer Media as a company was quite entrepreneurial. It was the type of business that encouraged new thinking, despite being a traditional media owner. I would say an easier transition than most from what is a corporate world.
Yeah.
I was very fortunate to have great mentors around me and people that I admired and learned a lot from. So my transition probably wasn't as
dramatic.
Or dramatic, yeah. It wasn't as dramatic as it may sound, going from structure 5,000 people to an office of sort of 50 people at the time.
Yeah.
But it was certainly different. It was social chain for many reasons has a unique culture. And it was refreshing. And it certainly, when I joined the business, I started to rethink about what I thought about the world of work should be and what the world of work could be.
What surprised you the most about Social Chain when you joined them?
Two things. I think I was surprised by the ambition. I think there was an underlying, and I think it's a common thread amongst all success stories in retrospect. I think you look back and go, there's almost a delusional ambition and optimism that anything can be possible. I think that was one thing that stood out. And the second thing that stood out was the maturity and level of hard work and care. Externally, Social Chain, very from the early days, was known as a business that treated their employees really well, gave unlimited holidays, had a head of happiness, did all these things that some may be skeptical towards, or externally people may think they're either done for cynical reasons or probably give this perception of young people being privileged today or lazy or, you know, all these stereotypes that can surround young people.
Yeah.
When I experienced Social Chain, it couldn't be further from the truth. I work with some of the most committed, hardworking individuals that I've ever worked with or been around, and everybody having a similar mindset, a similar set of values. And I would say those two things were probably most shocking.
Right. I think the ambition makes a lot of sense considering where Social Chain is today and considering the fact that there's not that many social first agencies that go big. And, you know, also independent ones that got started from nothing, right? I can think of a few other agencies, like, for example, Vayner, which is, you know, very focused on the social part of it. But it didn't start from a very young founder that didn't have, like, bootstrapped. So that's what impresses me a lot about Social Chain.
Yeah, and I was equally impressed. There's actually a funny story how I joined Social Chain. It was a complete coincidence. At the time, I remember, so I'm still in Bauer, and as I said, I maybe had some entrepreneurial roots, whether that was managing my own band or doing side hustles and those things.
Yeah.
And I was getting to the point where I had a million and one ideas. I was the guy that was buying domains because I had this... I had 1,000 ideas that I was eventually going to turn into businesses. And then as I'm sort of looking to do my own thing and thinking what businesses I may develop and those things, I came across a TED Talk, which was Steve's TED Talk, Steve who founded Social Chain.
Yeah.
And his TED Talk was how a bunch of kids built a multi-million pound business knowing nothing about business. And as someone that probably found himself going, well, I don't know as much as I probably should about business before starting one. Maybe it's a good idea for me to watch that. So I watched that. I saw Steve's TED Talk. And at the time, there was no intent from me. It was simply I sent him a message and just said, hey, loved what you're doing, inspiring work. And that was it. And I'll be honest, at no point in my life outside of business development for my companies and such, had I ever reached out to an individual personally just to say, that was an amazing piece of content. I'm inspired by what you're doing. And I got a response from Steve and he asked me to come meet him. And that was kind of the first time I ever did it, led me on a completely different path in my life. Whereas today I sort of live in New York. So I fast-tracked 4 years from when I sent that message. definitely changed my life.
You actually replied to a question that I had in mind, because so many times we have this extremely insignificant or seemingly insignificant events that, you know, go on and completely change our lives. So I love that you shared this story. It was spot on my next question. Good. So, you know, one question that I had in mind for you was, from everything in the marketing world, why do you think you ended in the agency world? Why do you think you chose this path specifically?
I think I ended up in the agency world simply because I never chose or never intended to go work in an agency. That's the honest answer. I ended up simply as a byproduct, because I set out my career as a musician, went through radio, through to media, through to being exposed to an agency that is a multitude of things. A social marketing agency is just one of many things that Social Chain is. And at the roots of Social Chain was always creating things people love, whether that was for themselves or whether that was for brands. So it was probably a more natural step to go from a media owner to an agency than probably it would appear on the surface.
That's so interesting. It led me to think about, you know, talking about your musical background. I'm thinking that you're actually the first person I interviewed for this podcast that was in a band before they started as a marketer. And then the second after music and bands is actors. So it's really interesting how, you know, people start with something very creative and then go on and have, you know, advertising and marketing careers. I think it's actually, it makes sense.
Yeah, I think so. And for me, creativity is a skill that I think is one of the most, if you had a stack of skills that you could apply to any industry,
yeah,
I would say creativity has to be a top five skill across every industry.
100%.
Whether you're a creative architect, whether you're a creative lawyer, whether you're creative in advertising, a mechanic, you name it. I think creativity is probably one of the most valuable skills that you can develop and nurture.
I couldn't agree more. Is there anything you wish you knew when you were just starting out in your career? If you would be able to give yourself an advice a couple of years ago, what would it be?
Oh God, yes, I would.
You totally take the chance.
A lot of things, hindsight and retrospect is an amazing thing.
Yeah,
I would tell my younger self all the winning football results. I would tell my my younger self. You know what I would say to my younger self? I think I've been very fortunate in my life to always have qualities that I think a lot of people that go on to have success in their field often have. I had a really good upbringing in the sense of great loving parents. I would say I've had delusional confidence and belief from a young age. I've always had a good work ethic. So I think like that's an underpinning. And what I would say to my younger self is don't worry about, and I think this is the something that all young people should think about and potentially worry about, is don't worry about what other people think. Just do it. I think putting yourself in uncomfortable situations, putting yourself out there, tomorrow's never promised. We only get to live one life, so just go do it. I think that's the, I think hesitation and I think I've seen moments in my life where if I could speak to my younger self, I would have jumped at more opportunities, I would have taken a lot more risks, and yeah, actually compared to I think a lot of people, I probably have taken risks and done a lot. However, I'd double down on that.
Yeah, that's great advice. So, you know, we talked a lot about the good parts and the beautiful ascension of your career. But something that I wanted to ask you, because our lives are obviously just roller coasters. So something that I wanted to ask you is, what would you consider the lowest point in your career? Did you have any, you know, doubts about your skills or your chances of making it in the industry?
The honest answer to that is probably no surrounding doubts. I consider it a luxury that I've always had a a huge amount of confidence. And I think that either comes from nurture of having a really loving upbringing, or whether that's inbuilt in your DNA. I've never had doubts. I've always had confidence. And I think that often comes not necessarily from what you've done or what you can do. I think that comes from just having the right value set and understanding that you'll be okay, and having gratitude and understanding that if you live in the, and I'll speak from my own experience, in the Western world, and you're healthy, you're just lucky. You're just lucky. You should privilege that. So I think having that perspective and optimism, because I think gratitude, I think ambitions, a lot of those things combined with optimism, is a really healthy place. And that probably leads to the second part of the question, which is, have I had down moments? Of course. Yeah. There's so many ups and downs, but I think it's how you respond to those ups and downs that really define you. And my philosophy in life is, you know, the yin and the yang matters. I also think that to appreciate the good, you have to have the bad. You know, to enjoy your downtime, you have to like work crazy hard at the gym, at sports, at work, you know, to enjoy your holiday. I think balance is really important. So having an optimism and a gratitude is a real good way of coping with those challenging moments, and actually trying to look at them as challenges that you overcome.
Yeah, I think optimism, this type of optimism, healthy optimism that you're talking about, is such a great skill, especially in our industry, and especially in the agency industry, when just there's so much rejection, not every idea gets implemented, and you have to be able to move forward and be able to, you know, look at the brighter side of things. I think that's an amazing skill to have. And you know, talking about skills, what like habits or skills did you struggle the most to develop? And if you have any current ones that you're still trying to improve?
Skills, great question. I suppose skills that I personally, and I think a lot of creatives often struggle with, is taking feedback.
Yep.
Creatives are often attached to their ideas,
yes.
and we're all guilty of it. So something I've continued to work on is feedback, and not responding emotionally to feedback and seeing it for what it is. I think it's really important to have that perspective. That's something I continue to work on. Other things that I personally find challenging, probably finding balance in life and trying to stay present. It's great and it's a privilege to get all the opportunities that you do, but equally that has a strain on you. See your family less, you know, in relationships you have less time for relationships. If you're an entrepreneur or you run a business of any capacity, or you're just invested in your work heavily, I think you can often be consumed by that and you find it hard to switch off. So another skill I'm trying to work on is staying present. And I've put a couple of coping mechanisms in my life to do that. In a morning, for example, because we work a global business, things are coming in at any one point 24 hours a day. I could technically respond and work 24 hours a day. So it's really important to put boundaries within that. So I wake up, until I am ready to work, as in I'm either going to the office or I'm about to start, I do the gym, I don't look at my phone, I don't look at social media. You know, I make sure I eat, I make sure I feel good, do all my routines, all those things, listen to some music, just trying to get in the right frame of mind and start the day right. Because, you know, out of 10 things you're going to see, those 10 messages, two of them are probably going to have a negative impact on your day. So yeah, I'm trying to put small actions and small systems in my life that allow me to be more present. And there are two things I'm really focusing on.
Yeah, but how do you actually start your day? What's like the first thing you tackle? And, you know, try and paint for us a typical day in your work life so we can understand a bit what this managing director in the US at Social Chain is.
Of course. So I usually getting on my routine, I put on the, I walk to work. So I live about 20 minutes away from our office. So I walk down to work, walk through New York. I listen to the New York Times, their daily podcast. It gives me some concepts to what's going on in the world. They usually pick one theme. It's about 20 minutes long. Try and get up to what's happening in the world, culture, those things. I get to the office. I make time to say hello to everybody. I think then I probably spend 20 to 30 minutes clearing out my inbox of things that I need to do. My inbox is my system to keep organized. So often if I've got things to do, I often email myself lists, or if it's in my inbox and it's not being archived or put in a folder, it means I still have to pay attention at some point. And I have a color code system for that. So I work through my emails, do my system. Probably then I will go through a series of calls with the UK business, whether that's working with our finance teams around priorities, discussing commercials. And the day then will be a mixture of calls, meetings, creative sessions, one-to-ones with people. And in between all that, I try and keep my administrative tasks that require less thought in the evening, when I'm sort of maybe flagging a little more. And I try and be systematic with how my good productive time, where I have to think and where I have to maybe do writing or, you know, write proposals or review things that require a lot of attention to detail. I will try to do those early. I do a lot of my, say, more casual meetings later in the evenings, or I do administration. But it can be a whole host of things in a typical day.
So you mentioned a few questions before travel, and I know that you travel quite a lot. What's the best place you've traveled for work?
Oh, the best place I've traveled for work.
Yeah, besides Romania, of course.
Romania, where we first met, or tried to meet and didn't meet.
Yeah.
You know what? I've been super privileged. My work has taken me all across the states, from Utah to Alabama to Miami to Vegas, Arizona, New York, LA, San Fran, you name it. I've probably been there in the last year. Outside of that, Brazil, all across Europe, across Eastern Europe, and then what I would say my favorite work trip is, I've done it for the last 3 years, or the last 2 years actually, is a conference that I do in Athens. I really love Athens. I love Greek food. I love Danos, the organizer, him and his wife. And I go out there for 3 days and do the conference and have an amazing time. And that's my favorite place, Athens, I would say.
One question that I had in mind, taking into consideration, you know, how busy the agency world is, and, you know, the rate of burnout agency people have, is how do you de-stress, or how do you clear your head when you're away from work?
So I de-stress. New York has a lot of things to do. So I'm very fortunate to live in a city where you always feel like you're missing out. There's always something to do, whether that's great food, great people, events. My favorite event that I came across that I think is worth mentioning, not one I've been to yet, you can pay $35 in Brooklyn to take your dog in fancy dress to socialize with other dogs in fancy dress.
That's amazing.
That's why I love America. But yeah, I suppose how I de-stress, I do a lot of things. I focus, I'm a big believer in mind and body. I do a lot of sports. I play football or soccer, as the Americans say. I do a lot of kickboxing. I've done that for a long time. I go to the gym. I've started running this year. My sort of macro goal is to run 1,000 kilometers this year. Not in one go, just 2.7 kilometers a day. So a short run every day. So I do a lot of that. I try then and spend most a lot of time with friends, family. My de-stress is that. And learning. I love to learn. I think it's something that I think everybody goes through phases. Learning is one of the things that keeps me most inspired. When I talk about inspiration, I think learning new things keeps me really and acquiring new skills or being exposed to things or thoughts that I hadn't thought of before, that always inspires me. So they're things I tend to do.
That actually, you know, takes me to my next question about inspiration. You know, after certain experience, It's really hard to still fuel your creativity and inspiration. So I'm wondering if you have some specific industries, or if you follow anyone, or what is it that you do to still get inspired nowadays?
Yeah, there's a couple of things on that. I think creativity, as I sort of mentioned before, it's something I personally really value. And I think a lot of businesses should value creativity. I think you can take inspiration from everywhere. There's a bit of a fallacy that creativity is originality. And creativity is not that. Creativity is taking inspiration from different sources and not necessarily creating something new, but generating new ideas and new thoughts and those things. So one thing that I think we're very fortunate to be in an industry that changes every single day, you know, a truth, an algorithmic factor I tell you today is different tomorrow. I think for those reasons, it keeps you on your toes and a thirst for learning and change. We create cultures internally at Social Chain. So we have large groups that are constantly sharing. We incentivize our staff to be sharing anything and everything they find interesting. And that can be from the marketing world, that can be from, you know, things that are happening in culture, that can be a new format, that can be something technical, it can be something creative, it can simply be something strange. And that creating a culture in the workplace of sharing and encouraging others and learning has really underpinned a lot of our successes we have with change. When I look at specific individuals, I was introduced into the social marketing world. Really, I think we put out a lot of good stuff, Social Chain, but I'm biased, obviously. But equally, love him or hate him, I was introduced to a lot of new thought patterns from Gary Vee. I think I think he can do some really interesting things. There's a lot of thought leaders in the space. I wouldn't necessarily say for creativity, but my favorite CMO at the minute is Fernando of Burger King. I think he does. I think Burger King have done an incredible job of championing creativity. And there's a fascinating case study that looks over 17 years of data that compares, you know, business performance at a macro level and award-winning creative businesses. And there's a clear trend of over-indexing when creativity has been front and center of the work that they've done, and everything from commercial performance to awareness. And it seems really obvious that great creative works, but I think in the marketing industry, in an industry where we have so many data points and we have data at our fingertips and we can predict future behaviors based on past actions, I often think creativity suffers. And I think creativity is suffering today, particularly in the social world, where there's requests to produce volumes of content. Right. So content volumes go up, you know, creativity and quality goes down. And I think that's what we've seen sweep the industry. And then you have brands like Burger King, you have the fast food brands that are really tapping into culture, that are being playful. And many don't like the tactic Burger King have employed by consistently going after McDonald's. But I think the key word is, some people think that's kind of a bit lowbrow as a form of marketing. But for their personality and their brand essence and their position in the market, it's the perfect thing to do. And when you actually look at their business performance over the last 3 years, it's phenomenal.
That actually connects perfectly to my next question and my last question before our rapid fire session. This industry is extremely dynamic and it changes so much. But at the same time, I think it's an industry that is so full of buzzwords. So I'm wondering, what's like one buzzword or one belief in the industry that is trending today that like really annoying you or that you disagree with?
I can tell you a philosophy. I don't like the phrase, everything happens for a reason. Don't like that one.
Why?
Because I think that's horseshit.
yes.
Not politely.
Yes.
I don't like that one for what it implies. It takes away accountability and I don't like that.
Yeah.
And then the second thing, what do I think in marketing is a lot of nonsense? I think, I won't say a phrase, but I think our constant need for attribution often leads to bad decisions. I think in marketers always trying to connect the dots I think you can sometimes miss the picture. So that for me is like an area where I think marketing can suffer. I think the use of data to make meaningful insight and inform correct decisions is so powerful. I think it's been misused in a lot of the industry.
So when you say attribution, what do you mean by that? Like, attributing revenue or, ROI stuff?
Yeah, making theory. So when it's, we're going to do this and we expect to generate this. and I wish it was that simple.
Yeah.
And I think in trying to black and white the world that is so grey, I think is can be dangerous. And I think it leads to poor decisions consistently. And I think it leads to manipulation. I think the industry in many respects can be manipulated. I think you can tell any story with any bit of data. And I think fundamental truths can be missed for that reason. That might not be a popular opinion in the industry. It's a personal opinion I hold. And there's probably lots of people in social chain that may disagree, probably our data team. And I lean more creative than I do.
I can't agree more with what you're saying. And especially, with attribution of marketing efforts to results. I had this opinion before that everything is measurable, you can track everything, you can figure out what's working and what's not, until I stumbled upon direct traffic. Go figure out direct traffic for anything. But yeah, that's my personal beef with the industry.
That's part of the fun. That's part of the fun.
Yeah.
I get it. I believe in it in the right place. But couldn't agree more.
Great. Okay. So I'll move forward with the rapid fire questions. So a few words, quick, fast. Are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Perfect. Good. If you wouldn't be doing what you're doing today, what else would you do?
I would like to say I would be an athlete.
Yeah.
You or not, I would be doing mixed martial arts or playing football.
It's amazing. That's very different. I expected something with arts as well, going back to your music career.
Maybe, but that would be the perception, but I love sports. Sports are what I love most.
Amazing. Good. Next one is favorite social media network or most addictive one, whatever works for you.
Okay. Favorite social media network is Twitter for me. Twitter because... I'm fascinated by a platform that has changed very little since its inception.
Yes.
And still finds a way to be relevant, interesting. I actually gravitate more in the, other platforms become more superficial and probably don't necessarily drive value to everybody. And there's questions surrounding ethics and the impact on society. I think Twitter... obviously can have its problems, but I think Twitter in my life serves a real purpose, and it's where I understand culture and learn about people and find out what's happening in the world in real time.
That's great. Okay. And then worst advice you've ever received?
Worst advice. This is a great question. Worst advice. Personally, the worst advice I receive, I probably don't listen to it, or
you don't register it.
I don't register it if it's bad advice, or I like to think I don't register it. So this is a hard question. What I would say, I think some of the worst advice that has been said to me and is probably said to a lot of people is, only look out for yourself.
Oof, yeah.
That type of advice that encourages selfish behavior.
Like, right.
I only care about me. I don't care about anyone else mentality. I think that's disruptive. I think it's unethical. And I think it's terrible advice.
Right. And my last one is, what's your favorite app or tool that you use at work?
Oh, I'm going to offend you with my answer. It's going to be offensively obvious.
I regret it now.
No, my favorite tool at work is I use Gmail. But I actually like Mail on Apple.
Wow.
I live my life through my calendar and my inbox. And as boring as that sounds, it really does work for me.
I mean, it's not Outlook, so it's okay. I can live with this answer.
It's Apple Mail and my Outlook, my Google Calendar. I'm going to say those two things are the thing that make my life easier the most. So I wish I had a better answer for you.
Oliver, that was such an amazing conversation. Thank you so much for taking time to do this. I think it's a great episode. I can't wait to launch it. I really enjoyed it. And for everyone else who was listening in, thank you guys and stay tuned till next time.
Yeah, and thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.